This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel, and we continue now with our report on decency and popular culture. 20 years ago, television was tame, but rock and roll wasn't. All the talk we're hearing now about indecency on television has roots in a campaign that started back then. It was about rock lyrics.
Knew a girl named Nikki, I guess you could say she was a sex fiend.
It attracted a lot of attention and, in fact, was resented by many an adolescent who is now a parent and somewhat more sympathetic in retrospect. The person who began it was the wife of then-Democratic Senator Al Gore of Tennessee.
I bought the Purple Rain album for our 11-year-old, and I didn't know that Darling Nikki was on it, and I felt that it was inappropriate for her and her 8- and 6-year-old sister to hear a song describing a girl masturbating in a hotel lobby with a magazine.
Tipper Gore stopped by recently to talk about the impact of popular culture on kids then and now, and how she became involved in the issue 20 years ago.
It was very personal. My now 31-year-old daughter was then 11, and she had two younger sisters, 6 and 8. I loved music, and I was letting them listen to all the music they wanted and watch music videos on television. And my 11-year-old bought an album, brought it home, played it, and then asked me about what some of the lyrics meant. So she brought it to my attention. This particular album had some great music on it, but it also had a few songs that were very explicit. So I said, let's take it back. Well, I got mad when the store wouldn't take it back because it had been opened and played. So I thought, wow, what can we do about this? What's a good solution to this problem?
This began as a straight-ahead consumer issue. You'd bought what you regarded as a defective product for the purpose of a young girl's music CD.
As far as I was concerned, according to my values and how I was trying to teach her, and I think that everybody has to make those decisions according to their own family values and how they want to teach their children. But as far as I was concerned, yes, I bought something that had I known what it was in the store, I would not have bought it.
So from there, you figured out what else was available in the store and that was being marketed to kids.
That's right. I found that there was a lot out there. There was everything from bubblegum music to pop music to thrash metal, heavy metal, to music that used violence against women in the lyrics, talked about killing police officers. I mean, you name it, it ran the gamut. It's out there now. I've never been an advocate, nor would I ever be, of addressing the content in terms of that can't be there.
You are not to censor the material.
No, not at all. I'm a strong believer in the First Amendment, and I was then, and I've never changed. However, since you have a great mixture of different kinds of content that's being marketed to young people today, the answer is consumer information in the marketplace.
You say you didn't want to have things removed from the marketplace, but as soon as you became involved in this, you ran into a buzzsaw of criticism of people saying if somebody is going to draw attention to what's wrong with the lyrics in some kind of rock music, she is at least a terrible prude, if not a censor.
Well, I was called all of those things and a few more. I just made it clear that I did not want to in any way change content. But what I wanted and what eventually the record companies agreed to do was for them to tell us when their material was explicit. Then you know it in the store. If you're concerned about that, you can choose not to buy it. At least you're not surprised by it.
How did you? You were a public figure at this time. You were the wife of a United States senator when you became involved. How does one balance the desire to shield one's kids from material that you find offensive in conflict with the values of your household, and also feel like you're an adult who is open to the new, which is going to be shocking by definition, and the avant-garde?
Well, I think we all do that according to our personalities, our relationships with our children. I have and continue to have very good relationships with my children. I explain to them when I would not take them to a movie or let them rent a movie or see a certain show. I believe in education. I am my children's first teacher. I think parents are. And so I wanted them to be taught the values that I thought were important in the decision-making process. I said to them, okay, you like X group. If you think that they are being cavalier about violence towards women in their lyrics and in their imagery, then I want you to decide whether or not you want to give them their money. You want to support them. It's up to you. If you want to buy that, then let's discuss it, though. Let's talk about what values you are condoning. And so they began to think about what they might like or what they might purchase more critically. I don't pretend to think that they didn't go and buy something that I told them that I didn't think that they should. I'm sure that they did, but I think it's very important to give kids boundaries to cross, rules to break, then no rules of all at all. But at the same time, making it very clear to them why you have the values you do and do they agree or not, and you're teaching them.
The 11-year-old whom you tried to return that album,
yes,
20 years ago, this is your eldest daughter, and she has kids now.
She does. She has two children of her own. They're 3 and they're 5, a little girl and a little boy.
And the media environment that you think that they'll be exposed to now as they grow up and, you know, push on toward their teens, similar to what it was 20 years ago? A little more menacing?
I think there's more of it. I think that's one thing. I mean, as we've just added video games and the internet as potential sources for them to come across material that their parents might be concerned about. It's not just, you know, music, movies, TV. It's, I think, if we talk about parents and kids, we got to take a look at all of it. But certainly there's a difference in what's commercially marketed at them and to them and for them. So there is a difference there. I think that one thing that's not being discussed as much as I would like to hear it be discussed today, and I know that my daughter and I talk about this and she brings it up, is violence. You know, everybody seems to get a little bit more keyed off when it's sexual content, but really we ought to be concerned with the fact that kids spend about 35 hours a week of screen time, whether it's TV or their videos or games. They'll see 8,000 murders and 100,000 acts of violence by the time they finish elementary school.
Or in video games, they will have committed a fair number of those themselves.
And those are interactive. So, you know, perhaps that's something that really people ought to pay attention to. And I think that, again, I'd like to always bring it back to parents, families, the home. That is where education has to take place. That is where the guidelines have to be set by parents. And that's where they either say, this is off limits to you, or, hey, you can do this according to, you know, discussions with me about it.
Tipper Gore, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Tipper Gore was a director of the Parents Music Resource Center. To read an excerpt of Tipper Gore's 1987 book, Raising PG Kids in an X-Rated Society, you can go to our website, npr.org. And once there, you can also hear our coverage of the 1985 hearings and find out more about the Parents Television Council. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.